designed to encourage, empower, and educate real estate professionals by sharing best practices from business leaders that are proven winners. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and this is Calibrate Real Estate. Broadcasting from the Mile High City, you are tuning in to the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and thank you for choosing to download this episode. I've got a special guest, Ivan Estrada, who is a broker associate and CPA, a rare distinction, with Douglas Elliman Real Estate. And Ivan and I are buddies because we were both 30 under 30 honorees in different years, but Realtor Magazine produces that that recognition once a year, and it's a really special group of people from a national perspective. Ivan is actually recording this in LA, and I'm in Denver, and so I'm so excited to introduce Ivan Estrada. Ivan, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks, I'm excited. Let's do this.
So for everybody that is tuning in on the iTunes app, make sure to check us out on YouTube. You can actually see both of us, and then vice versa. If you're on YouTube and you want to hear it as you're getting your morning run in or you're doing errands or whatever you do, you can listen to us on the iTunes app as well. So Ivan, first thing I always ask people is, how'd you get your start in real estate? But most importantly, not only just how you got your start, but why did you decide to choose a career in real estate? I know you had a background in other industries before real estate.
Right. So I started my career outside of college. I worked for Deloitte in the accounting practice. So I worked there for 4 years, audit and tax, got my CPA license, thought that that was my way to make it up through the corporate ladder. And, you know, after my fourth year, I came to the realization that, you know, this isn't making me happy. I'm depressed. This isn't my calling in life. I need to figure out what I need to do, because I had come from the entertainment industry. I'd done that for many, many years. I didn't want to go back to that, but I knew I wanted to be around people. I wanted to help people. And so I fell into real estate by complete accident. I did an internship at a Beverly Hills real estate firm, and I did it with this team. She's no longer in the business, but she was just a powerhouse. I interned with her for a couple weeks, and I just thought, wow, like, this woman knows what she's doing. She's not a real estate agent. She's a business owner. She's an entrepreneur. She's looking for the next best thing in real estate, in technology. And I was just so inspired by that, that I thought, I want to be that woman. Well, not exactly that woman, but I want to do what she's doing. And so that's when it all kind of came together. And so I've just, you know, it's been 8 years now, and I've been building my team, and it's literally still feels like it just happened last year. Like, it's, the time has gone by so quickly, and I'm just like so happy. You know, you wake up every single day, and I jump out of bed at 5 a.m. every day, and I'm just so excited to do what I do and to try to always keep pushing the envelope as much as I can.
So I have a couple follow-up questions for you, and these are things we didn't prep for, but I've just got to park on this concept of working as a corporate accountant for Deloitte. So my brother, one of my best friends in the world, was a corporate accountant for Deloitte in Washington, D.C., and that is a grind. For people who don't know, I mean, that is a huge commitment during tax season. Most people think of tax season from a personal perspective, but when companies are doing audits and also when they're preparing their quarterly reports, as well as annual year end, depending on when their fiscal year ends, I mean, that you're working until 11, 12 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock in the morning, on like an everyday basis for a month.
80 hours a week. 80 hours a week, and that doesn't include travel time. So it's nuts.
And it's kind of designed to really spit you out, right? Chew you up and spit you out, and it's a grinder. And so tell me just a little bit about how you use that type. I mean, obviously that's something that shows your grit and your determination, your willingness to persevere. But how has that foundation served you in real estate? Because being a CPA is very rare in the real estate industry. And I can imagine, we'll get into some of your clientele here in a little bit, but I can imagine that that's served you very well in your real estate career.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just first and foremost, it's like your work ethic. I mean, you're working 80 hours a week, and that becomes, after a while, it becomes normal. Like, this is what life is. Like, this is, you work 80 hours a week, and that's just about it. So for me, it was really that work ethic. Also, the responsibility. I mean, you're auditing and doing tax work for these multi-million, multi-billion dollar corporations, and you're so responsible for, you know, your portfolio. And so just learning to be responsible, learning to have that work ethic, and then also working on keeping a schedule. You know, I think for me, keeping a schedule at Deloitte, it was everything that you did, you had to input it into the computer. I worked on this for 45 minutes. I'm doing this for the next 2 hours. So these are all things that I know have really kind of pushed through in my real estate career and has given me that kind of oomph that really made me propel, you know, within the first couple of years to be one of the top producers in my office.
Yeah, and I think one of the hidden gems there also is, and this really are the things that I think about because I help real estate investors, it gives you a leg up on being able to operate your own business, right? I mean, we're all independent contractors as real estate agents. And so you now know how to run a profit and loss statement. You know how to analyze ratios and you know how to kind of take a look from a higher level of your profit and loss and decide, and everybody knows if you are or aren't profitable, but where you're overspending and where maybe you can add some additional spending to make more revenue. And just that thought process, I think, is really important.
Return on investment, huge.
That's good stuff. So you spoke briefly about the activities that you do to start your day. I overheard I was listening to a podcast a couple weeks back of success guru and one of the original thought leaders, Brian Tracy, talking about how the most successful real estate and then also just salespeople get their day started early. There's a correlation to success in getting up early. So you said you get up at 5. I'm an early riser as well. I'm up between 4 and 5. I was this morning. So what do you do after you get up? You're sitting around eating a bowl of Cheerios. What are you doing?
No Cheerios. So I get up at 5 and I meditate. I meditate for anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes. And I had been hearing for years about meditation and about how amazing it was and how it kind of, you know, reduces stress and it kind of really focuses you on what needs to get done throughout the day. And for being as ADD as I am, I thought I could never do it. And so once I tried it, I mean, it changed my life. And I went actually to this conference, it's called the Summit. They have it once a year. I mean, you have Elon Musk, you have Richard Branson sitting up on stage. You have doctors from all over the globe telling you that you have to meditate, because if not, this not meditating actually increases your risk of heart disease, of cancer. It really kind of, and now UCLA Medical Center is including meditation into their wellness practice for people who have suffered heart attacks, strokes. So I've done it now 3 months consistently, and I cannot tell you how much it's helped me. Like, I wake up clear every single day. Things that used to stress me out don't stress me out anymore. I'm able actually to be very grateful, like, for things where before it was, you know, the gratitude was never even part of my routine. And I'm actually able to step back and be grateful for everything that I have and everything that I've done. And so after I do those 10, 15 minutes, I go to the gym. I usually go to the gym for like about an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes. Cardio and weights. And for the first hour of my workout, I listen to TED Talks or books that I'm reading, like Tools for Titans. And so for that first hour, if I'm going to have a day where there's a tough negotiation ahead, I'll go up on TED Talk and listen to a TED Talk about negotiations, one that I haven't heard before. So that way I feel like I'm being prepped for my day. And then I listen to the music, take a shower, and then hit the office. By the time I hit the office, I'm focused, I'm ready to go, I'm energized, and I'm literally clear until probably 5 or 6 in the afternoon when I just poof, crash and have the best sleep ever.
It's awesome. And that's the thing I love about being an early bird. And I've always been geared this way. And I would say that for those of you that aren't geared to be an early bird, you may not wake up at 4 or 5 like we do, but try to get up before 6. I think there's a strong correlation, even if it's at 5:55 a.m., strong correlation to just getting your day set right. And having a meditative practice or prayer practice in your life, I think, is really important. So a question that I have related to meditation is, someone's kind of embarking on this. They maybe can't make it to the summit, but they're listening to this podcast recording and they're wondering how they learn more about it. Do you have a book or a resource? Or I've heard that there's apps that help you through meditation.
There's an app called Headspace. It gives you 10 free sessions. And then after that, it's very inexpensive. I think less than $10 a month. And you can do anywhere from 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, there's people who meditate for over an hour. I don't think I can do that. Or, you know, I just don't have the time to do it. But from what I've heard from other, I have an attorney friend who he's now like a meditation expert. And he said, all you really need, Ivan, is 10 to 15 minutes. You don't need to do the hour. But, you know, as long as you can do 5 to 10, maybe some 15 minutes into it, it's like, that's all you need.
Yeah. And the thing that I love about meditation and quiet reflection is it gives you time to oxygenate your blood. You know, you're breathing, you're focusing in on your breathing, but then you're also, you're having someone or in the case of an app, something kind of take you through this process where it calms you down. It gives you a spirit of being centered as well as having that spirit of gratitude, which I think we get lost in the hustle and bustle of everyday life. And so it's a great opportunity to set your day right. And I think that I think it's really cool that you share that. So next thing I want to talk about is, so you start your day in a certain way with that centering, that thoughtful reflection, and then you're hitting the gym, you're getting your blood pumping. And I love that you listen to TED Talks or podcasts, going back to Brian Tracy and then Zig Ziglar and some of the other great thought leaders of last century. A lot of people will say your car is the best rolling library you can have. You know, we've got these amazing smartphones that you can basically tap into any motivational speaker or any type of influential person that you want to learn from. And instead of cranking on the tunes, I do the exact same thing. When I'm on Stairmaster or I'm on a jog, I'm listening to something. It's either reviewing one of my podcasts or I'm trying to learn from someone, or I've got several podcasts that I like. So on the TED Talk stuff, there's a great podcast. I'll send this to you afterwards, but there's a great podcast with a gentleman by the name of Chris Voss. Have you ever heard of him?
No, I haven't.
So he's a skilled negotiator. He's an FBI negotiator. He actually wrote a book.
I have his book. It's somewhere down here.
Yeah, there you go. So
if
you've never heard him speak before, he's got this East Coast accent, and it's fascinating to hear him talk about literally negotiating with terrorists, negotiating with people who are going to, you know, jump off a building, and just kind of getting into their psyche and leading them to give him answers that he wants, but doing it in such a way that they feel empowered to give him the answers. It's a phenomenal episode on negotiating. And he's been on several different podcasts, but the one I like is called Entree Leadership that he was on. So you do all this to set your day right. Then you're in the office, you're working with clients, you're in LA, you've got some pretty notable clients. And so I found it interesting when we were prepping for the show and just getting to know you that you're not actually working with your clients all that often. You're working with their business managers, you're working with their agents. What's it like to work with celebrities? I think we all kind of think that that would be a cool thing to do, but give us the real scoop on what it's like to work on behalf of celebrities.
It's a lot of hard work, to be honest. I mean, these individuals, I think I've been kind of demagnetized from actually being like, oh, I'm working with my favorite singer or actor. I see them more as people. And when you see them without the makeup, without all the, you know, the beautiful suits and the dresses, they're just like you and me. And, you know, it's just keeping that in mind. And also, they have crazy schedules. I mean, sometimes if they're filming a movie, they're on set for 20 hours, 22 hours. So it's, you know, things change. I've been at appointments where it took me 2 hours to drive out to Malibu to meet them, and they cancel on me 5 minutes before. And it's just part of the process. You know, it's just, I have a couple rappers that I've worked with, and oh yeah, I forgot I was supposed to meet you. So it's just, it takes a lot of patience. But it's just, you know, it's just like working with anybody else. I don't think, you know, they're looking at you as a resource and as their fiduciary. They're not looking for a friend. I had to learn that on early on. You know, we're not going to become buddies after this because they have enough buddies and they're not looking for a friend. They're looking for a professional who's going to help them find a house.
Yeah, you hear about this a lot with the music industry, with the rap industry, and with professional athletes especially. But I just imagine anybody who comes into wealth, a lot of these people came from humble beginnings, and they already have, you know, third and fourth cousins coming out of the woodwork. They don't need their realtor to think that they're, you know, best friends. And I think that that's something that's important to share, that if you look at working with anybody, and it can go for the same thing with my clientele in Denver, and these are people that you wouldn't know are, you know, all that different from you walking down the street, because they're not, you know, they're not on Entertainment Tonight or something like that, but they are people that have created significant wealth, and they don't want to have someone who's trying to buddy up to them. They want an advisor. They want someone who can add value to them, and they want someone that can approach things in the way that they need you to approach them in. And you're basically working on their schedule, not the other way around.
Not my schedule.
Yeah. So it's interesting, as the celebrity realtor, the biggest thing that you're taking away from that is you can't be the celebrity in that exchange. And I think a lot of real estate agents get that mixed up. You know, they're the local celebrity. They're the, you know, they're the person that, and there's some good community aspects, especially in small communities. But I think when you're working with the clientele that you are, you're trying to really focus in on what value you can add to them, not how cool you can be.
Exactly. Exactly.
So as we talk about your clients, what would they say differentiates you? We talked about your CPA. That's a real big differentiator. But why do people work with Ivan Estrada and not some other realtor in LA?
I think the team aspect for me has been huge, because, you know, at the beginning, when you're just one agent and working with your clients, you know, you never want them to feel like they're being handed off or that they're not getting your full attention. And my business coach at the time said, look, the Ritz-Carlton doesn't run itself. There's not one person running the Ritz-Carlton. There's a team of people that are there to give you that experience together, collectively. And so what I learned was, you know, having the right fit, having the right team put together that are just like me, that know exactly what my work ethic is and what the whole, you know, the message that I want to get across to our clients, I think for us is, all our clients, even though we're probably have a book of right now ongoing 32 clients, they will never feel like number 27 or number 28 or number 32. They all feel like number one. And that's for me and for my team, that's incredibly important, because I never want to lose touch with them, even though, you know, Nick might be showing them properties, or Erica or Leslie or Christy. Even though they're showing them properties, they're still being touched by me in other ways, where they feel like they're actually, they have a whole team backing them up instead of just one agent. And I think for us, that's been a huge differentiator with a lot of just single agents who are trying to make it in the business and trying to do everything for everyone.
Right. And I've heard a lot of different realtors communicate on how they are able to specialize in one part of the process of working with their clients as they let their teammates run the other parts of the process. What are the things that you keep your fingers on, and what are the things that you make sure that you delegate to the team? You talked about showings and touring people around. I think that's a pretty logical delegation. But what are the ways that you make sure that your clients know you're still in the loop and you're still involved?
So for example, for the showings, I'm not there for showings and I'm not there for the open houses. But right after the showings are over, right after the open houses are over, they hear from me. I heard you liked house number two. That's great. What did you like about it? Okay, that's awesome. Well, let me add this to your notes and then we'll go from there. Erica said that you guys had a great time. The open house is the same thing. I will reach out to them after the open house and let them know how it went. And if I have a client, like for example, that I hand over to my buyer's agent, I mean, he's out there running around doing everything with them, but we're on a mass text together. We're on an email together where I'm always putting in my input. And then when it comes time to actually put the contract together, then, you know, we'll have conference calls regarding negotiation and credits for repairs. So I'm always involved in one way or another, but I feel that, you know, at this point in my career, I have more value in the negotiating or in actually getting them what they want, instead of just running around all over town, which anybody could do.
Yeah, I love that. And I would imagine that for people that are working with business managers and agents, if they're a celebrity, they're going to understand that process pretty well, right? So that's something that they plug into. And so
managers are part of teams themselves. You know, it's
right.
You have your tax person and your audit person, the person who's paying the bills. And, you know, so it's like they have the same team mentality that we do. And that I think that's why it works so well.
As we were prepping for the recording, you had mentioned that you love working with your team and you feel like that's something that really is something that you're very proud of, that you've built a great team. But then your team works with other teams. So If you could just kind of give us a little bit of a snapshot of what it's like to be working with a business manager or an agent, or, you know, their tax attorney, different people, the CPAs. What is that like? I mean, it sounds like a lot of people management and a lot of communication.
It is a lot of people management. Like I said before, we're always on a mutual email together. Depending on what the job is that needs to get done, if it's on the listing side or currently on the buying side, you know, there's different people that are going to be involved in this process. And so I know who to reach out to at the business management firm if I need the bank statements, because I'm not going to bother, you know, business manager number one if all I need are bank statements, and I get that from his assistant. Or now, okay, well, we need to get the contract reviewed. Okay, I need to go to assistant number two, who is now dealing with the attorney, so that then they could send the contract to the attorney, they can get it reviewed. But at the same time, business manager one is always involved in the conversation. That way they know what's going on at all times, but I'm not reaching out to them directly. And I think that's how we all work, depending on who we know that is the point of contact, is who will always be, you know, the two, and the CC is everyone else who's involved, but without actually bothering them for certain documents that, you know, might not be of what they're responsible for.
Yeah, you're keeping everybody in the loop, but you're really directing the question to the right person. And that shows that you're intelligent, or your team is intelligent, because you can pick up on those cues if this is that person's area of responsibility. But it also gives everybody else the opportunity to weigh in if there is something they're like, oh no, we've got a change here that someone needs to know about. And I find this fascinating, because so many realtors, you know, they're working with a husband and a wife, or a couple, partners that are buying and selling real estate. I mean, you're working with this corporation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a lot of work. And so that's a big coordinated effort. I think it's really neat.
A lot of decision makers, which at times can get complicated. But because then you have to kind of, two are on board and two are not. And so then it's kind of, you know, as a team, we all have to kind of come in collectively and figure out, okay, these two are on board, these two are not, what are we going to do? We got to do something to kind of bring everyone on board and make sure that we're all on the same page. So yeah, it's working with a husband and wife. That's easy stuff.
Well, and you know, what I find is very interesting too, is it's going to be applicable in your industry, in my part of the industry, and in someone else's part of the industry as well. But we've got technological advances. Obviously, email's not new, but email is something that I think a lot of us rely on. We've got text messaging, we've got video chat, we've got all these different ways that you can communicate with people. But I think that some of the fundamentals of the good old-fashioned phone, when you're actually hammering out a negotiation, are important. So when you're interacting with these people, is it all purely electronic? Are you getting in the room with people? Are you doing conference calls? How does that work when you really need to get something done quickly?
I'm not in the room with them, and it's not electronically, it's definitely over the phone. We'll definitely have a conference call, because I don't want there to be, I need to be efficient with my time, so I'm not going to drive down to the business management firm, which could be an hour away with traffic, and they're not going to do the same. So through email, something could get miscommunicated through something that was written. So over the phone as a conference call has always been the most easiest and most efficient way to be able to negotiate something.
Yeah, and so much gets lost in tonality, in the, you know, when someone is communicating, you're losing a lot of that when it's just done by text, because you're reading it from your perspective. You're not hearing their voice inflection. You're not hearing the way that they're communicating it. And they don't have an opportunity to have that back and forth. It's someone sends it, you digest it, and then it gets sent back. So yeah, when it comes to really complicated negotiation, I think a lot of people feel like, oh, I'm going to send, you know, a 5-page email, and it's like, just pick up the phone. You can handle that in 10 minutes, and a lot's going to get lost. And, you know, frankly, if you ask the right questions and you really mine for that information, you're going to get to what you need in that negotiation.
Exactly.
All right. So you've had a lot of success. You've done that on a national level. We'll talk about this later in the interview, but you're doing some TV work, and that's really, really cool. So with all of that success, I certainly know this for myself, I feel like my successes are often born out of my failure. You know, the seeds of success are often in the manure or the crap of the failure. And I often find myself standing on a mountain of failure as I've succeeded in one area. So Would you talk about your approach to not getting things right? Obviously, you want to be accurate. You want to do things the right way. But, you know, we're all human and we're going to have errors. And so how do you handle failure? How do you process it? How do you decide how you move on from failure?
So failure, I hate that word. So anytime I've had a failure, let's call it a mistake.
Learning experience.
I try to take a step back and just kind of see, okay, what did I do? Was it something that I had control over that I could have changed? If I had no control over it, then, you know, there's no control. But if there was something that I physically did, said, or did not say that caused the problem, then I really try to reflect and figure out, okay, this is what happened. Next time, what am I going to do so that this never happens again? And then it's also the way that you process it. For example, I remember at one point I was reviewing contracts through my iPad. And once I made a mistake where I overlooked something, where I had to buy somebody a new refrigerator, a nice refrigerator, a Viking, which is about $10,000.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, I can sit here and freak out about it, or I can learn from this experience. I had always looked at contracts, you know, using actually just printing them out, and I never had a problem. And so I thought, okay, technology is awesome, but when I get contracts, I'm actually going to have to physically print them out and look at them. And then I thought, and the way that I processed it was, well, Ivan, it was a refrigerator. What if this was a much bigger deal? This a much bigger home, and it wasn't just a refrigerator. It was the refrigerator and the range and the dishwasher. That could have been a $50,000 problem. So this is kind of just like one of those life things where it's like, okay, you know, you need to learn. It's going to cost you a couple of $10,000. I'm like, okay, no big deal. And I think that's some of my biggest successes have come from failures. Also, not just with contracts, but with, you know, my videos that I used to do on YouTube. It wasn't until I started splitting my real estate minutes into actual minutes, not compiling them all together and putting them out there, which was like now like a 4-minute thing. It launched into a different, stratosphere, which is awesome. So I think it's just the way that you process it, as long as you learn from it, and as long as you just don't focus on the, okay, what did I do? Oh my God. I mean, I just try to look at it in the most positive light as possible and then just learn from it. I mean, it happens. We're all human. You know, things are going to happen and they're going to continue to happen. It's just as long as you know that they're going to continue to happen in some capacity, well, there's nothing else you can do.
Yeah, and I like the way that you reflect on how to respond to the mistake is probably the most important thing, right? You know, I've got little kids, and we've all had that experience with someone where you say, hey, look, this didn't turn out the way that I expected, and you're the client in that exchange, and someone kind of blows back up at you and says, well, you know, whatever, and you know, they say something really quick, and or they try to be witty about it, like, look, I just wanted you to say, like, hey, I'm sorry, you know, this didn't turn out the way that I expected, and what can I do to make it better for you, and how can I super serve you, and just so many different ways to handle something. That a lot of it is not necessarily the error, but the way that you handle it. And I love that you talk about that. The other thing that I love, and this is something that I have had in my mind and you just accentuated, is let's stop using the F word. Let's stop using failure. You know, let's talk about, these are life lessons, these are mistakes, these are learning experiences. And my mentor, who was a 30 under 30 in 2005, his name's Matt. He used to, and this is when Entourage was real popular, we used to just hug it out when there were certain things that went wrong. And he's like, come on, we had a learning experience, and let's slow down the process. Let's get this thing figured out. And it's all about moving forward, right? You know, if you dwell on it, you're stuck. And that's the thing you don't want to do, is dwell on something that happened wrong.
Exactly.
So let's talk about some of your successes. You've got this new show that you've been recording several episodes for. It's really cool. I'll let you speak to it because obviously it's not airing just yet. But talk about the TV industry as a realtor. I mean, I'm a big fan of Chip and Joanna Gaines and Drew and Jonathan Scott and all the other HGTV stars. And there's so many other stars. I've had a chance to interview Kendra Todd from Seattle, Washington, who is the winner of The Apprentice, and she's a realtor. So what is it like being a realtor, but then also being, you know, becoming a celebrity in a way yourself? How does that all jive for you?
So coming from the entertainment industry myself, of being in front of a camera and actually loving being in front of the camera, I think for me that was like training that I was getting as a child that kind of, you know, served me well in the future.
And you're a recording artist, right? You were saying?
Yeah, I also was a singer. So being in front of a crowd, for me, that was like the ultimate, like, yeah. Like, I don't get scared being in front of a crowd. Like, I actually love it. I love the energy that I get from it. So for me to be able to broadcast myself into other people through YouTube or on HGTV or on TV, for me, that's such an amazing thing. It's so, it's incredibly powerful. And so, you know, I've been so lucky that, you know, putting these little videos that I started doing on YouTube, from a camcorder to then hiring a crew to then getting bigger to then being noticed on, you know, from being called from an HGTV producer saying, we want you to be on. And then here at Douglas Elliman, I do have my own PR agent, and they're the ones that are getting me on CNBC and NBC. And so all these amazing opportunities have come about because I intentionally put it out there. I want to, you know, be able to spread my message, just not, you know, through my local community, but, you know, nationwide, and who knows, maybe internationally. So it's been a really cool experience. I mean, I love it. Anytime the camera goes on, I go on. It's incredibly exhausting. I mean, here at our office, we have Matt and Josh, who are literally right behind me here. They're at $1 million listing. And then Tracy Tudor, who's on this other side, they're on $1 million listing. And it becomes a job. I mean, to record a whole season of $1 million listing, it's 4 months of every single day, 6 days a week, to put a show out there. And so it's an extra job that I honestly, if I do get that opportunity to get my own show, I mean, I think I would take it. Because you never know. It's all about building that brand that, you know, let's say if 8 years from now, 10 years from now, I'm not in the real estate world as an agent, I could still be involved in it through, you know, a TV show on HGTV or on E or NBC. Like, you never know. But yeah, I think, like, I love it.
I think it's a very cool way to continue to show your creativity. And I think as realtors, we're in the creative space. Obviously, there's financial aspects to what we do, but, you know, whether you're creating brochures the old-fashioned way or whether you're creating, you know, virtual tours or somehow showing someone real estate is inherently interesting. You know, there's a reason why Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous was such a cool show 30 years ago. And that's just continued to explode with cable TV, with all of these different real estate dedicated shows. And I think it's very interesting that you had commented when we were prepping for this that people often are different when they're on camera than they are in person. And that can be just they kind of clam up and they're not ready to prepare, or they're not prepared to deliver what they should be doing, or they're arrogant or they're meek or whatever it is, their personality kind of changes. So how do you prepare and how do you keep that authenticity as you're on screen?
For me, it was just practice. It's practice. As an actor, you're taught never to look at a camera. And so when I first started doing my show on YouTube and looking at the camera directly, it's such a weird experience other than just ignoring it. So it just took practice. It took practice of me doing it over and over and over again. I remember at the beginning, I would take my episode and watch it, and I looked like I was at gunpoint. It was really bad. And so I just think it took kind of just training myself. I remember going on YouTube and looking at classes of hosting and how you're supposed to stand and how you're supposed to move your arms. And, you know, it just all became, I started training myself and actually did take a course for hosting out here in Hollywood, which was incredibly beneficial. So it's just, I think at the end of the day, it's anybody could do it. You just have to get comfortable with it. And the only way that you're going to get comfortable with it is if you practice, like everything else. You want to be a better tennis player, better golf player, better gymnast. You have to keep moving forward, practicing. You're going to fall. You're going to make mistakes. And that's the only way you're going to learn.
Yeah, continuing to get up after you make those mistakes is the most important thing. And there's a lot of things that you just said in that answer that I want people to really hear. There's so many resources available to you free. YouTube's a great one, and you can both be a consumer of YouTube information, but then it's also a great training ground for you to actually use your speaking and presenting abilities. And it's going to be rough. My first couple of podcasts were not good. It's kind of funny to listen to those 3 years later. My first couple of interviews that I did were frankly not very good. And so I've learned how to prepare and rehearse. And, you know, you don't learn that by yourself in a vacuum, you know, not with someone else there speaking. And so I think it's very interesting that you just talk about the level of practice, and people say, well, how do I get practice? And part of it is just doing it on your own. You see countless videos and recordings of amazing superstars in the music and acting industries that started when they were 8, just doing a little, you know, hokey thing with a cheesy little microphone that they were speaking out of. And that's how people get their start. And if you keep with it, you keep getting better. And then obviously you have to have some talent too. There's that part of it. But I think a lot of people just assume that people just get out of bed and immediately are good at acting or good at speaking.
Exactly. Just practice makes perfect, as corny as it sounds.
Yeah. And I love the phrase, the 5 P's, that prior preparation prevents poor performance. So that's the 5 P's. And what you have in anything in life is that you're going to rise and fall to the level of your training. So, and that's an old military term, that you're going to rise and fall to the level of your training. And I think that that's apropos in anything, whether it's real estate or acting or the combination of the both. So memorable things, and then we'll wrap up our interview with my favorite question at the end. So what's kind of the most memorable thing that you've experienced in your real estate career, or really gratifying experience that you've had in your real estate career over the last couple of years? You've had a lot of highs, but what would you say are kind of that impactful experience that you've had in your real estate career?
For me, that has been just the building of my team. You know, my team is an extension of who I am. They're my family. I see them 8 hours a day, every single day. And, you know, you have to love the people that are around you. And, you know, I feel very grateful that, you know, they've stuck with me for such a long time. We're there for each other. And as you see, I keep looking this way because that's where they're at. And I'm just like, you know, we just went to New York together. We had tons of meetings. We're so different, but at the same time, we're so alike in so many ways. We have each other's back. And, you know, I think I've asked them, like, you know, was it just something that just happened? They're like, no, it's how you've trained us, how you've coached us, how you've been a leader to us, of not just using us for your financial gain, but you want us to be successful as well. And that's so true. I look, if one of my team members isn't doing well in business, things aren't going well because there's things going on at home, that problem then becomes my problem. And I try to figure out, how can I help? What can I do? What can I do to make things easier for you? And I think that's something that I just feel so incredibly grateful. I mean, I have awesome clients, many amazing experiences, but I think the experience that I get to live through every single day is being in this office with the people that I love the most. And that's my team, my family.
I love that, because you can tell it's genuine. You can tell it's from the heart. And that's the direction that the real estate industry has gone, is operating in a team, having these powerhouse teams. It's really difficult to be a solo agent. And I was one at a period of time. I was on a team. I got my training on a team, and then I broke off of the team, and you're kind of doing it as a lone ranger for a while. And you realize it's difficult to keep up with these powerhouse teams. And so I think it's really cool that you assembled a group of individuals. And we had chatted about this briefly, but I'd love for you to communicate it again. Just how do you get the team to fit? And I find that, you know, like any, you know, all-star team, right? You know, you get an all-star team put together, and a lot of times they don't perform well because it's a lot of egos and a lot of people that, you know, I want the ball, if you're using the sports analogy. So how do you pick teammates that are the right fit? And as you're adding teammates to an existing team, how do you make sure that the new teammate's not going to disrupt the chemistry of the existing team?
So when I was at Keller Williams, they had the DIS profile, which I had taken. My DIS profile is a DI. And so I learned early on that if I brought another high DI into my team, we'd probably destroy each other. So, you know, I sat down with my manager and I told him exactly where I was heading the next 12 months, 24 months, 5 years. And he's like, okay, these are the type of personalities and people that you need to find for your team. It's not the smartest, not the prettiest, not the one with the most sales, because if those individuals don't have the personality type that's going to fit together so that there's no conflict, then this whole team is going to fall apart. And so I think for me, giving them the disc is incredibly important. Also personality. I mean, I do this with my clients. When a client's looking for a CPA, okay, I have six of them. This is my client's personality. I'm going to fit them with that other CPA, with that client to the CPA, with the similar personality, because it's, you know, people do business with people that they like and people that they can relate to. And I think that's incredibly important. And as I continue to build my team, when I interview people, it's not just myself. I have my team member here, my team member here, and we're all on in it together. And as intimidating as that might be, I feel that, you know, if I'm going to be adding a new team member to my family, I need to make sure that my family feels comfortable and approves with this new decision. And so it's just not me making the final choice.
I love that. And the DISC personality profile is one of the easier personality profiles to understand. There's several others. There's StrengthsFinder, there's Myers-Briggs. We've heard of locus of control on our podcast. Brad Allen uses that. And that's a pretty deep psychological dive. But DISC personality profile is really, really simple. I'm actually going to drop a link to have a discounted rate on a DISC personality profile in this podcast, in the podcast notes, because you can do it for $15. I do it for every single one of my team members. We do it a couple of years later as well for team members that have been on the team, because your DISC personality changes. It doesn't change completely, but it does adjust at different times based on what you're doing and who you're surrounding yourself with. And then we do it every single time we interview someone, whether they do get hired or don't, because you are looking for that fit, and they never get hired because of their DISC personality profile. But we want to make sure for a DI that we've got someone with some pretty high C that's working for them. Because that person's going to be able to be very correct, very straightforward, very cognitive, not always the biggest personality in the room. They're kind of your accountants, right? Those are the people that are your number crunchers. But for someone who's a driver like yourself or dominant, someone that really makes stuff happen, you need someone that's going to be there that's that supportive, you know, that isn't someone who's going to crumble when you say something really quick as you're blowing off to the next appointment. So you've got to have that person that's got a backbone, right?
Exactly. Yep, you have to, or else the whole team, it'll start crumbling and then it'll kind of dissolve.
All right, so final question. It's Dear Younger Me. It's this idea, and it comes from a song that I really like, but it's this idea that you're writing a letter to yourself. It's the advice you wish you knew when you were 22. So now you're in your 30s. I'm in my 30s as well, and it can go for your 40s or 50s, but what's that advice that you give to that person that's aspiring to be someone like Ivan Estrada? How do you kind of give them advice based on some of the missteps you've made? And if you had 30 seconds with someone that's 22 years old, what's the advice that you would give to them?
The biggest advice that I would give to them is to stop comparing yourself to others. I think that when I started in this business, I didn't grow up with a huge amount of wealth. I didn't grow up in Beverly Hills. I would always compare myself to those agents who were born in Beverly Hills, who did have wealth. And I would say, I'm never going to be like them because they grew up here or they have money. Or, you know, I would compare myself to agents who had been around for 18, 20 years and were, you know, hitting it out of the park, and I wasn't there yet. And I was like, why am I not there yet? This is so frustrating. And it would literally close me in and close me down. So I think really just, you know, not listening to the outside noise and just focusing on yourself, focusing on growing yourself. Something that I learned from my life coach, it's an LA thing. I don't know why we do it, but it's been very helpful, is we all have a different journey, right? We all have a different journey. Realtor A, Realtor B, my sister, my cousin, we all have a different journey. And, you know, it doesn't mean I'm not going to get to the top. It just means that my journey is going to be a little bit different. And that made me really understand to really, you know, be grateful and just stick to myself, make myself a better person, a better agent, a better business person, a better entrepreneur, and not comparing myself to anybody, because I think that was really breaking me down at the beginning. And especially when you're 21, 22, you know, we're not really there. Like, you know, now that I'm 33, I think about the things that were not a problem, the stupidest stuff that would just take me down, that I just now I'm like, oh, Ivan, you were so immature. But hey, you know, we all grow up, experiences mold us. And I think, you know, long story, this was more than 30 seconds, it's just never compare yourself to anybody else.
I love that because it's apropos. It's exactly what I feel like. And there's all sorts of different pieces of advice. That's a question that a lot of people answer different ways. And sometimes it's financially driven. You know, hey, I would steer clear of this type of deal or that type of partnership, or steer clear of getting into a bunch of consumer debt. That's one of the answers we get. Another answer we get is mentoring, or who influences you, right? Who you surround yourself with, because those are the people that are speaking into your life. And if they're positive or they're negative, you know, if you drink from a poison well, you're going to get sick. If you drink from a well that's pure, you're going to feel good. You're going to have vitality and health. But then also that idea that, hey, you're in this race on your own. Run your own race. And I love this example. It was reminded to me by our first episode interviewee, Karen Briscoe. She wrote a book that's basically a daily devotional. Every single day of the year has a real estate application for realtors on it, best practices, things of that sort. And one of hers is personal best, is what she calls it. And it came from her children. And I've got children that are competitive swimmers. So we were very much linked in this, because she was talking about competitive swimming, that it's all about racing the clock, racing against yourself, racing against what you just did the last meet or the last year, and trying to constantly get yourself better instead of focusing on what someone who's an Olympian, who's maybe, you know, 3 inches taller than you and has different training and whatever. You're focusing on making yourself better and improving yourself. And I think that's really, really key. And that helps you with that comparison trap.
Exactly.
All right. So final thoughts that we have just about being a rock star in the real estate industry. What do you think things that are people that are young in the real estate industry really need to focus in on? We've talked about YouTube. We've spoken about kind of working with people's teams. Are there any parting thoughts that you have on just how people can be successful in the real estate industry, whether they're in Kalamazoo, Michigan, or LA, or Denver, or Washington, DC? What's that kind of unifying thing that you'd love to share? Because you do a lot of speaking to different people, and we're going to be doing an interview at this 30 Under 30 reunion we're doing in April. So what's advice would you impart to people that are getting into the real estate industry?
So biggest thing is just educate yourself. You really need to continue. You know, you passed your exam, that's just the beginning. Like, you know, like a doctor, like a lawyer, like a dentist, there's all this new technology coming out. There's new information coming out that'll affect your clients. So stay on top. Like, if your finger's on the pulse, that'll differentiate you from so many agents out there who are just out there trying to get clients, but really don't know what they're doing. So I think educating yourself, there's a ton of designations out there that you can take that'll just make you, it'll give you that confidence so that when you're with your clients, they'll be like, wow, I feel comfortable. I trust my agent because they're incredibly educated on what's going on, incredibly educated on my area. This is the type of person that I want to work with. And that's where, you know, you close a deal and you'll get referral after referral after referral. And then also, you know, don't be salesy. Don't be salesy. Be that fiduciary for your client. And again, I think that's going to come from educating yourself. And also, you know, I do a lot of social media. There's YouTube, there's Facebook, there's Instagram. Believe it or not, I get tons of business from Instagram and from Facebook. So, you know, just reminding people on a constant daily basis without being too intrusive or salesy, you know, with fun pictures of awesome homes or experiences that you've had, and just continue building that social media platform, because a lot of the millennials, which are about 30 to 40% of our clientele, that's where they're at, is they're on social media. So don't reinvent the wheel, but it's always nice to add a couple things to it that'll just improve your success in the real estate world.
Yeah, I love that. We spoke about, you know, the idea of education. The last thing you want to do is have surgery with a doctor that's dusting off their medical books from 10 years ago and haven't gotten some advice or best practices from other people in that particular surgery. The last thing you want to do is get legal advice from someone that's going back into the 80s or the 70s that hasn't continually educated themselves or hasn't had the experiences in the area that you need their help in. And so continuing to learn, continuing to get involved in projects that maybe you might not be as a student, but maybe you have someone that's got a higher level of competency that they help you learn it. I've gotten a ton of experience through working with others in that way, where I say, hey, let's co-list something. This is something that's a little bit outside of my area of experience, or I'm just going to ask you some questions because I know that you're an expert in this area, but I've got a great relationship that I want to work with someone and I want to be their point person. And then referring business out there. I have some friends that, especially as they get older in their career, that have been in the business 30 and 40 years, that they make almost as much money referring business as they do actually selling real estate. And it's amazing how many people, especially if you're in a place like Denver or LA, where people constantly are traveling to those places, you can get so much business from just referrals and really networking within realtors.
So true. That's what I was doing in New York.
I love it. And you're masterminding and you're connecting with people and you're trying to find a way that everybody can get the right answers to their clients. So Ivan, this is phenomenal. We've been good buddies for about 3-4 years now. I am so excited to interview you in Denver here in April. We're going to have that episode become another podcast. So this is a little bit of a preview of what you're going to see live when we broadcast in April at our 30 Under 30 reunion and real estate conference. For Ivan Estrada, I'm Kyle Malnati, your host of the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. And as I love to say, as we close out every show, we will see you around the neighborhood. Thanks, everybody.